You are back recording, Dr. Cornwell.
Okay, so item number 4A1, case number 19-21, Lisa Hall, physical therapist.
And I'll give you a summary. This is complaint 19-29, an informal hearing for Lisa Hall, PT, for allegations of engaged in the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist due to a deliberate, negligent, or failure to act, regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established, and on R-424-304-3, and 32-2044-6, failing to supervise assistant personnel, physical therapy students, or interim permit holders in accordance with this chapter. ARS 32-2044-20, failing to maintain adequate patient records. ARS 32-2044-22, providing treatment interventions unwarranted by the condition of the patient or beyond the point of reasonable benefits. And rules R-424-304-A2, if an electronic signature is used, electronic signature is secure. And R-424-304, adequate patient records. Ms. Hall, are you present?
Yeah, I am.
Thank you.
Ms. Hall, by any chance, are you with counsel?
No, sir, I'm not.
Okay. Are there any others on this meeting who would like to speak to this case? We just need to know who you are. And okay, that's fine. All right. So I have a script that I have to read. Okay, so let me pull it up. All right. Let's first have the board members and staff introduce themselves as well as board counsel.
I'll introduce a public member, Mr. Greer.
I'm here.
Public member, Mr. Clinton.
Here.
Professional member, Dr. King.
Here.
Professional member, Ms. Remick.
Present.
Professional member, Dr. Cornwell.
Present.
Professional member, Ms. Hunter.
Present.
For staff, we have customer service rep, Ms. Trepius.
Present.
Licensing administrator, Ms. Crowley.
Present.
Veronica, I'm very sorry, I forgot your title.
You're on mute.
Administrative services officer, I just said, don't call me late for dinner.
Thank you. And investigator, Ms. Richardson.
Present.
And our assistant attorney general, Ms. Baskett.
Present.
Okay. So, Ms. Hall, would you please introduce yourself formally for the record?
Yes, my name is Lisa Hall. I'm a physical therapist working in the Valley since 1988.
Okay. Hold on. We'll give you an opportunity to make a statement if you'd like, right?
Okay.
The purpose of an informal hearing is to hear relevant facts by way of testimony and exhibits to determine if a violation of any of the board's statutes or rules has occurred. If the board finds a violation, it may take any or all of the following disciplinary actions. 1, issue a decree of censure. 2, place restrictions upon a licensee's practice. 3, issue a civil penalty of not more than $500. 4, issue other disciplinary action. 5, issue a non-disciplinary order requiring completion of continuing education as specified by the board. If the board finds the violation or possible violation of statute or rule is not sufficiently serious to warrant disciplinary action, the board may issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter. If the board finds that there was no violation of the board's statutes and rules, the board may dismiss the case. If the board finds that the violations warrant suspension or revocation of the license, the board shall vote the matter to a formal hearing. All right, so we need to swear everybody in who's going to provide, who's going to speak, okay? So Ms. Hall, would you raise your right hand? And Mindy, is this, Are you going to do?
It is Ms. Richardson.
Okay. So is everyone raising their right hand who will be speaking?
Yes. I can verify that their hands are raised.
Okay. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Ms. Hall?
I do.
Ms. Richardson? Ms. Richardson?
You're on mute.
I do.
Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Richardson, would you give us a brief overview of the complaint?
Do you want the allegations?
Let me do that. So the intro, other than the allegations that were previously cited, is the board opened complaint 1929 after review of complaint 1821, Christopher Morton, PTA. The board alleges Ms. Hall engaged in substandard care, failed to maintain adequate patient records, provided treatment beyond the reasonable benefit, failed to secure electronic signature for three patients, patients B.O., J.N., and P.S.
Okay. Thank you, Karen. All right, so Ms. Hall, now, if you would like to make a statement, you may.
I don't have that much to say that I didn't already respond to in my response letter to the issue. This has been going on, hanging over for a long period of time, and I'd like to get it over with. Honest to God, I don't have any more response to these charges than I already have responded, to be honest with you.
Okay. And I'm assuming that you'd be willing to answer questions if the board has any.
I will, to the best of my recall of the situation. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yes. Right.
So do any of the members of the board have questions for Ms. Hall?
Ms. Hall, this is Peggy Hunter. Can you explain a little bit about the deficits in your documentation? Because there is quite a few.
Well, I can only explain that there were, in my, again, my personal opinion, a bunch of mitigating circumstances in that I was working as a contractor. I had been there less than 3 weeks in a new situation. And I was trying to juggle several balls at the same time. And I don't disagree that my documentation suffered in that period of time. I was handed a large number, several cases of patients that had been under care for a very long time. And I had either seen them once or never seen them and was handed a reevaluation to do. Like I said, I take full responsibility for deficits in my documentation at that time, but I don't think it reflects my normal level of documentation at all. I did the best I could with what information I had and with what, the situation was. Being new and being new there and new to that employer and all of that stuff. I take full responsibility for deficits, but I don't think that my documentation that was pulled is reflective of my normal documentation.
You understand this is all we have to go on?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. That's what was pulled.
Okay.
I agree.
So can you explain the relationship with the PTAs that you supervise? I mean, was there any discussion about contacting you, et cetera, communicating with the PTA?
Yeah. I communicated typically in the mornings before the day started and through the day if there were questions. Absolutely. I did the best I could, again, in a very large facility with a strange situation going on. I don't know how to say this, but it's not that I didn't feel some discomfort with how things were going there, but I was new and I was trying to figure it out so that I could then, you know, make sure. But I did talk to Chris Martin each day that I worked with him. While I was there, I had no idea, none whatsoever, that they were using me as offsite supervision when I was not there and would not have agreed to that as a contractor. So that's an issue that I guess I have no defense for, other than it was done without my knowledge. And had I been agreed to doing offsite supervision with a PTA, there would have been compensation as a contractor. I don't know.
So when you looked at the notes when you were supposed of Mr. Martin, and he had you down as a supervising physical therapist, did you ever talk to him about that or anything?
No, I didn't. Again, on the days that I was present there, I assumed that I was the only physical therapist on site typically. So I did assume that I was supervising him on those days. The days that I'm talking about are the days where I was not working for them and I was not on site.
But you were able to see notes that he had written when you were not there that then should have identified you as a supervising physical therapist. Correct?
Yes. If I, again, reviewing some of these parts all the way back to the last time that I saw them, yeah, I suppose that if I had the ability to review a whole chart of 37, 38 visits, those kinds of things, yeah. I mean, to the detail. Again, I'm not defending any misaction on my part. I really am not. I don't think any of this is reflective of my normal work. It's an odd situation. It was an odd environment for me. It was new. And I was doing the best I could to get acclimated and figure out everything that was going on. So that's my only, I guess, quote unquote defense. If you all determined that my documentation is not satisfactory, supervision wise, again, I spoke to him each day that I worked with him about what was going on. And on patients that I'd never seen that were coming on, I definitely talked to him. And sometimes the actual therapist that had reevaluated that patient prior to find out, you know, what had been going on lately with that patient. So, yeah, I admit I probably did not read every single note in a chart. In some of these situations, these happened on days I wasn't there. And I usually, if I see a patient, I will review at least the last re-eval, maybe both previous re-evals if there's more than one, and then usually I will review the last week of notes. That's how I do it in those situations, right or wrong, that's usually what I do.
Okay, well, you know, it's concerning when a patient has 50% weight bearing and then you signed a note by Mr. Martin that stated worked on standing balance without UE support with equal weight bearing through bilateral lower extremity. I mean, that should have been a huge red flag for you to speak with Mr. Martin. Do you agree?
I agree. I don't know to which one you're referring because I don't recall that. But if that's the case, that's absolutely true. You're so right.
All right. Thank you, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
This is Dr. Cornwell. There's a patients JN and PS where you evaluated either a Berg balance score or a DASH score, and they had previously had each of those, but didn't show. By the time you evaluated them, they hadn't shown any progress. Did you have access to those initial or previous values for those two tests?
I likely did, have access to that. I don't, I mean, I, again, in reviewing previous reevals, I would have had access to that. The question is that functional test, to me, the only thing that determines whether I'm gonna continue a patient? For me, it isn't, particularly on a patient that I'm not familiar with, that others have been seeing for a long period of time. A lot of times I'm going to rely on the reports of the people that have been seeing the patient. In these cases of these geriatric Medicare patients, typically that, you know, have an up and down course. I agree, these courses had gone on way too long. I mean, but the question was, have they been improving as of late? Have you, you know, was there and some mitigating? And sometimes it was a situation where, oh yeah, they had a decline for a minute and then they're on their way back up again. So, you know, in their opinion, they thought that they would benefit from continued therapy. So I don't use just those functional tests as my only, although again, those are important and I'm learning the importance of that. Again, my background is not geriatrics. That was also fairly new to me. But it's been a huge learning curve. I'm, you know, finding out the importance of the functional testing and those kinds of things as well. So, I again, you're right. They didn't change that much, but in other ways, you know, they were, the report was that they were on their way up again and that, you know, that continued therapy was indicated. So I hear on the side of what other therapists, what other providers were telling me that had been seeing that patient.
Can you be a little more specific? So what other things did you consider and what was it that swayed your decision to keep seeing them?
The reports from other providers on how they had their course to date, and you know, and the fact that there, you know, hadn't been a whole lot of, they've been in the system for a long time. What's going on? Why are they there? Well, you know, usually it was a matter of they had some kind of decline that, you know, they had started to make progress again, and so I, you know, I took that in consideration. And second is the patient. The patient, you know, feeling on whether they felt that further therapy would benefit them. That's important to me too, in addition to my objective exam, which either was equal or slightly better than the time before, usually didn't go backwards. But that's usually—
Did you get that from the notes? The previous providers, was that in your notes or
and
was that in person?
And some of it was in person and some of it was per the notes.
So the stuff that was in conveyed to you in person, that wouldn't be in the note then, right?
Well, not necessarily, no.
So how are we supposed to know whether or not those reports were made? And
you're not.
How do we judge whether or not this was a logical decision to keep seeing them? 52 visits for JN, and I'm assuming that balance was an issue, but balance didn't change.
Yeah, she had a central nervous system issue. That they were, she had an implant and they were adjusting it constantly. So it varied. Sometimes, you know, it would mess her up when they adjusted it. Other times it would improve certain things. And by, as I recall, we're talking, yeah, the patient that we're speaking of, who I didn't see very many times. So in the fact that I know even that much about her in that short period of time, I do review records. I am pretty fastidious about it, actually. As much as I can take in and know about a patient before I see them, I do. That's me. And you can ask anybody that I have worked with. I am usually a pill about information before I see a patient, as much as I can gather. So I guess it's just my word as a, you know, a therapist that has been interested in nothing more than patient care. direct patient care.
So I understand that the because of her diagnosis and the implant, that it could vary from one day to the next or one week to the next. But we don't see multiple evaluations to show what the average is or what the trend is or what the limits, the highs and the lows. We see one test. So, I mean, to me, it would seem logical that if you know that they're going to fluctuate, that you do those assessments more often so you get a better picture of really what they're like.
I don't disagree, but I don't see them that often. When you look at these charts, I was basically assigned to them at the time to reevaluate as opposed to any of the interim. So I'm contracting, the schedule is set forth for me. I do my best to review what's been going on with them since I saw them the last time. And I have no defense. If it's determined, the board determines that my records are not, you know, up to par, I'm more than willing to take responsibility for that. I do try my best in most cases. Okay. I'm not perfect.
So how many times, I just don't have it right in front of me. How many times do you think you saw this JN?
I probably saw her in total during that course of care, I think maybe three.
Okay.
Maybe three right. times.
And
I mean, toward the very end of that, you know, that course that she was put onto my schedule. Yeah.
And so, how many times did you see PS? The one with the shoulder dash problem, dash yeah. evaluation.
I don't think I saw any of these patients more than three times.
Okay.
But if I recall correctly,
all right.
more than three times.
Thank you. All right. Mm-hmm. No more questions from me. Anyone else, any other board member have any questions?
Yes. Hi, Ms. Hall. My name is Nushka Remick.
Hi.
I listened to your interview and also read through your written statement. I appreciate how thorough you were. It helped me understand. I'm wondering if you could speak to, because I can't recall if I heard it or read it, can you speak to at all how your password is secured, or how is it that your name is available to appear on documentation from others when you're not physically working that day?
I do not know. I did not give my password out to anyone, so I do not know. And that's something that you know, is pending, in my opinion, on whether I'm going to go try to figure out what's going on and how that happens. But no, I don't have any idea. I didn't pass out my password to anyone, so I don't know. And it was never explained to me.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, did you ever ask anyone how that happened?
Yeah, by the time these came up, these allegations came up against me, this was over more than a year out, and the PTA supervisor and the PTA in question both gone, right? So I didn't get any answer as to how that happened or why. No, I'm a contractor. My license number should not be used in any way, shape, or form. So I do not know how they did that. But it was wrong.
Okay.
And
okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Any other members of the board have, oh, sorry, there you go.
That's okay. It's okay. I just wanted to kind of refer back to my notes. It's Dr. Kelly King. Hi, Lisa. I had a question. I'm reading through some of the investigative report and some of your and some of the notes, and there was one in particular that indicated that when you reviewed some notes, you noted that the PTA CM had intermittently been performing glenohumeral mobilizations since long before you were there. And I don't see where you addressed that with him or just determined whether that was even an appropriate.
I didn't know that until Mindy brought that up to me. And in my chart review after the allegations came is when I found that. These in the notes that I would review, like I said, in previous reevals and recent daily notes is what I review before I go to see the patient again, typically. And in none of those notes had that treatment been administered by anyone. So in other words, I didn't know until Mindy brought that up that he had done glenohumeral mobilization for her. I did not know that.
Would it have been your normal practice to write a discharge summary for a patient like this, going back and reviewing the number of sessions and the treatments that they received in order to close out this particular file? And if so, would you have normally reviewed the things that this patient experienced?
Would I have read every single note, you mean? Is that?
Well, it looks like on this particular one, it says that glenohumeral mobilizations had been intermittently performed since well before the first reevaluation. So there, I'm assuming then that there were multiple instances of that.
Well, I went back to review the record, Kelly. So I mean, after these allegations, I went and reviewed yes, every single note painstakingly. And that's where, you know, because I was like, when did he do glenohumeral mobilizations? And I was like, so yes. And once these, I reviewed the entire record from start to finish on each of these patients at the time. And so, yeah, that's where I'm like, gosh darn it, he did. But they were all times that were, you know, long on times where I would not have. One, I wasn't there, and two, where they wouldn't have been a normal record that I would have reviewed in on the day that I'm seeing the patient prior to seeing the patient. Does that make any sense to you?
It does, and I guess then I just need to. I'm just asking then, what is your normal practice for writing a discharge summary then?
Well, I will normally count up the visits. I will typically pour through the reevaluations over time to see the progress from the therapist. And then the recent, probably the most recent notes is what I would probably go through in a case that long, to be honest. And again, I have very little experience working with PTAs in general. I handle my patients from start to finish. Typically, this contracting work was new to me. I was hired to do home health, and didn't know until pretty much a day or two before that I would be seeing both outpatients and home health patients in the same scheduled day with two EMRs. Which it was a very confusing situation for me from the start. So again, I was orienting myself. I do chart review. I'm a nut about it. So I do the best that I can to know as much about a patient before I walk in the room with them as I have time to do. And a lot of times that was the night before. I finished today's records and I'm looking at the schedule tomorrow. And if I have questions, I'm sending it in to get information as best I can. I think that's the irony for this is that I'm somebody that really does try to know their patient before I walk in the door. So, you know, I'm a little bit mortified, a little bit humbled by this whole entire situation, just being perfectly honest with you. and I'm trying not to get emotional here, but I'm a little bit embarrassed and mortified.
Lisa, can you share with us how it's changed your practice going through this experience?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, I'm just way more aware of the details. And, you know, I did take the documentation course, and, you know, it was a bittersweet response for me because, again, I learned that I need to more specific goals. I need to more objective goals, I suppose. You know, there's correlating findings with your goals, those kinds of things, little things. But I also felt a teeny bit vindicated in that the full record that I turned in on a patient that I saw start to finish was a good record. It was deemed a good record. And I felt a little bit better about, I know that what you guys are looking at is not a typical group of records for me as a therapist, and I'm embarrassed. Be perfect now.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Kelly.
Just one more question for me, I promise. Sure. Are you going to continue doing contract work?
No, ma'am.
And what about, you said you didn't have a lot of experience treating geriatric patients?
Correct. My background is orthopedics, and more specifically, I was coming off of about 24 years of work injuries. Work injury care. So it's a very, very narrow window in comparison. And to be honest with you, I went to sleep during that time. I thought I would, you know, die in work comp. And the very reason that I left that was that they went to a more cookbook fashion instead of individual patient management and patient care, and that really bothered me. But what I found out was that I had, you know, pretty much gone to sleep for a number of years with regards to keeping up with Medicare requirements and all that stuff because I didn't deal with it. It wasn't something that, you know, I dealt with. And so I don't know if you can put yourself in that situation where, you know, you're behind the times and you're behind the eight ball with the knowledge and the understanding and right off the bat, you know, understanding the regulations and those kinds of things, especially in different settings. I mean, home health's different than outpatient. Outpatient's different than, you know, a care center or a skilled nursing. And it's all changed. In a therapist that's done this for 33 years, you used to be able to go from one to the other without a whole lot of hubbub, but it's so different now. And I didn't know it. You know, I didn't pay attention to it because I really thought I would just stay in work comp. But I came out and I found out, yeah, it's a lot different out here than it was the last time I was out in the main world. And so, yeah, I'm doing my best to continue to be a clinical therapist that gets to treat. It has the opportunity and the privilege of treating patients. That's what I like to do. That's it. I don't want to be the boss. I just want to treat patients and do the best by them that I can. That's it. I don't have any more to say about that, Peggy. I don't.
No problem. How many hours was the documentation course that you took?
It was an 8-hour course that Peggy.
Okay.
All
right, thank you, ma'am.
Yep, you bet.
All right, do any other members, board members, have any questions? Okay, this concludes our question. Questioning period. So, Ms. Hall, would you like to make a closing statement? You don't need to, but would you like to?
No, sir. I think I've pretty much laid it out there.
Okay. So now we move into a discussion amongst the board members. So that was your last chance to tell us something. Okay. So what are the board members thinking at the moment? Anyone want to make a motion? I think that there's several things going on that I think are worth to consider. I think she was put into a situation where she found herself out of her league, so to speak, for lack of a better term. Now, I'm a little disappointed that she didn't say, you know what, I'm really out of my league. I need to kind of back out and back off. I think that's, you know, she's admitted to the documentation that we have not being representative, but that's all we have to go on. She's taken a documentation class. The treating beyond reasonable benefit is a little bit more complicated, because I think it's clear that the charts did not show progress. I think if patient had been able to show some progress and it was quite evident, then I think that Ms. Hall would have been able to give me a better description of why she continued to treat the patient rather than just to go on the DASH or the BERG. And I understand that's not the only thing you can use, but she had a hard time telling me what else she used. It appears that because she only saw them three times, that it was like, you know, yeah, it's not changing, but who am I to say what the other therapist saw and why she's been seeing them so much longer. So I'm not sure that is quite up to the level that I'm looking at. I'm not clear in my mind exactly what motion I want to make, however. So I'd be interested in anybody else's comments.
This is Peggy. I know it's probably very problematic when you're doing contract work, and I'm sure that Ms. Hall, if she ever does it again, going into the same situation, will make sure that her permission has to be obtained to supervise PTAs, which she probably didn't even think of, just assumed that wouldn't happen. The documentation is not good, and there's some red flags in there that I think should have been addressed, because it goes to patient safety. I'm glad she took the documentation course. I wonder if we have a copy of that by any chance.
This is Mindy. We do not. It was requested but not received.
Okay. I think it's important that we see that to make sure she did take it, no offense. I think it would, I'm not making a motion or anything, I'd like to hear what everybody else says. I think it would benefit if after having taken the documentation course to have some chart reviews and familiarize herself with supervision.
This is Nishka Remick. I just wanted to offer where I am at with regards to this case. I do also think that there are some mitigating factors here, specifically that she was there for 3 weeks as a contract employee. And so I do think it's challenging to be able to probably research the chart to the degree that one would like. I also found some of her rationale for progressing patients despite a lack of clear objective findings slightly problematic. So I guess I'm still not quite sure where I sit with this. I do find her to be very humble throughout this entire circumstance. I found her responses to indicate that she was trying her best and very knowledgeable to the degree she could be about her patients. And so I'm still not clear on how I would move forward with this case. And I look forward to hearing what other board members have to say.
Nushka, it's Kelly. I am in agreement with you on several of the points that you make. While I appreciated hearing Lisa's thoughts and her journey through this piece, looking at the whole picture, she's not a new grad, has been practicing for quite a while under our state practice act, and then just somewhat uncomfortable with, I didn't know and I wasn't sure and I didn't have experience in these things, but yet I took work in a place that I probably shouldn't have. So I am with you. I don't know. I think that supervising the PTA, boy, if she's not something she's used to doing in the past, immediately diving into that would have been, and what that looks like as a practitioner under our state practice act would have, I think, been super important for her. The minute she heard she'd be supervising PTAs. So again, while I appreciate the journey that she's gone through, I still think that there's some opportunity for her to grow professionally, potentially through either, you know, CEUs or, like you said, some potential monitoring.
Well, it appears that we're unanimous. We don't know what to do. It sounds, let me see if I can't try to summarize some of the thoughts. It appears that the inadequate documentation is consistent across the board. So it would be a benefit for her to beef up that. She's taken a course, and so maybe monitoring would deal with that. Supervision comes up. Again, that could be handled with the right kind of a continuing education course that or having to take the jurisprudence exam. I failed to ask her what kind of setting she's currently working in or where she plans to be, but it sounds like whether it's back to orthopedics or if it's continues to do some geriatrics in some form, that it might be worthwhile for her to kind of retool in those areas, because they can be kind of specific, especially geriatrics. I think an ethics course could be encompassing the supervision and things like that. So I'm thinking more of continuing education at this point and maybe monitoring.
This is Peggy. I agree with that. I think she would benefit greatly from a chart review. I believe she should take the jurisprudence exam again. And I think chart review, maybe three charts, and also be on probation for 1 year. And she would be able to request early termination after everything is completed.
Do you think she needs to have additional education in the area of supervision, or is that going to be?
I do, because it seems like, you know, that she just wasn't used to working with assistive personnel. And I don't know if she's working with them again, but I think that would be very beneficial for her.
Do you think that needs to be an actual course, or can it be handled with the jurisprudence exam?
I think the jurisprudence exam would probably be good, but I think it's also Ms. Hall's responsibility to look into that, to read the rules and regulations on supervising assistive personnel, which, no offense, it doesn't sound like she did, and it's available.
Peggy, I agree, really. There's also some excellent resources on the ideal PT-PTA relationship through the APTA website. So there's lots out there about what that relationship, not just legally supervising, but what that relationship should look like in practice for best patient care.
I agree.
Peggy, do you want to try to put that into a motion?
I'll try. Anybody can jump in. So I make a motion that Ms. Hall should provide proof of the completion of the documentation course that she took. And after that, we would do a chart review of 3 charts. I believe she would benefit. Yes.
Listen, let me interrupt you. If you're going to do a board order, the board needs to do findings of facts and conclusions of law prior to the order.
All right. So
thank you, Dr. Donahue. This is Mona.
So
thank you.
Finding of facts is under this is under the jurisdiction, correct? It would be so these would be the rule violations.
So if you look under your informal hearing brief, the letter A is regarding substandard.
Oh, I see. I was on the wrong page.
There are 3 bullet points underneath that would be findings of fact. And
right.
So you have to decide if you accept them, want to expand on them, or delete any.
Okay. So I make a motion to accept the factual allegations A and the bullet points 1, 2, and 3, B, which is failed to supervise assistive personnel, etc. C, failed to maintain adequate patient records. And
that should be B.
B, yeah. And C, did I say C?
You did.
Okay.
Do you want the 4 bullet points under?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And
I want all bullet points included.
Okay. So there, all the findings of fact has indicated in the informal hearing brief is your motion. You're in discussion. Oh, I'm sorry. Do we have a second?
Dr. King, second.
You're in discussion.
Well, I have issue with did she include R-424-304-A2, the electronic signature part?
Ms. Hunter, do you want that included?
Yes. Thank you for pointing that out, Mr. Clinton.
Well, I take exception. You know, I don't think we really proved that she had any control over that, and that it seemed that she didn't even know that it was being used until after the fact. So I really don't think that is appropriate here.
Well, it's hard to believe that somebody could do that without her knowledge, without having the password.
So, Ms. Hunter, I'm just going to interject that it is possible for the administrator to sign any document without the knowledge, but it requires the person to be the administrator of the program.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Donahue. Well, then I agree with you, Mr. Clinton. We won't include that.
So will the second go along with that?
Dr. King?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
This is Nishka Remick. Under factual allegations A for substandard care, I'm not sure that I'm convinced of all three of those bullet points. I wonder if anyone else had that same sentiment.
No, I had the same sentiment, Dr. Cornwall. I would be in favor of moving this one.
I'm sorry, which one?
Substandard care.
I would too. This is Nishka Remick.
The entire thing or just some of the bullets?
Well, I mean, if at least one bullet remains, then that whole substantive fact stays, right?
Correct.
Well, you all are physical therapists. You should know this more than I. But I think when, and I don't know if this goes to some standard care, but I think when you look at a documentation where a patient is 50% weight bearing and you see that the PTA has not done that and you haven't said anything, I think that's substandard care.
I don't think removing it will change the outcome or what, you know, what will be concluded on the board order.
Okay.
I guess for me, I would be in favor of removing all of them because on a criticality list, I do not find specifically the last two to be extremely critical. So I would be in favor of removing the entire one. I agree, it may not change the outcome ultimately.
This is Mr. Greer. As the discussion is focused on removing things, I see this case as a non-discipline case, and I would oppose the motion and instead look for a non-disciplinary remedy in this case.
I disagree.
Mr. Greer, can you elaborate on that just a little bit?
I just, this is one where we have a licensee who made a mistake, but I think the greater sins are the organization of which she had no control over. And, she's already taken a documentation course. As I get more into this case, I just feel that this is not a discipline case. This is a non-discipline case. I don't know if I can articulate it more than that.
Okay.
So the motion before you is on the findings of fact, just to bring you back.
Mr. Greer, I echo your feeling. I share that same feeling. I would be still interested, however, in recommending continuing education.
I agree with that as well.
I'm not sure that I would be in support of monitoring.
Okay. Any other questions or comments related to the motion? And so the motion is to accept the findings of fact.
So if the rest of the board members do not want to accept A, I'm fine with removing that.
The second is in agreement.
So we'll remove A from the findings of fact?
Yes.
And again, when you vote on findings of fact, it is your wish and will to produce a disciplinary board order.
So I guess I'm trying to figure out if we accept the findings of fact, aren't we kind of committed down to a disciplinary path?
Yes, correct. That's correct.
If you were interested in a non-disciplinary order, you would fail this motion and then have the opportunity to present another motion regarding this case.
Okay, I just want to make sure and thank you, because I want everybody to understand what they're voting on.
Right, so a vote of no means that you are not interested in findings of fact, which means you're not interested in a disciplinary order. A vote of yes would mean that you are interested in pursuing a disciplinary order.
Okay, does everyone understand? And are they ready to vote on the current motion?
Yes.
Yes, and Karen, can you just clarify that the current motion has section A removed?
Yes.
Thank you.
And you're ready?
Yeah, I think we're ready.
Okay, so the motion before you is to accept findings of fact under the informal hearing brief number B, 2 bullet points, number C, 2 bullet points, and ARS 2044-22, 4 bullet points. Mr. Greer.
No.
Mr. Clinton.
No.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Ms. Remick.
No.
Dr. Cornwall.
No.
Ms. Hunter.
Yes.
The motion fails. You are ready to start a new motion.
This is Mr. Greer. I would move that we do a non-disciplinary order for 6 hours of continuing education in the area of record keeping and 6 hours in the area of continuing education of ethics. It might be noted that the licensee can fulfill the record keeping by providing proof that she has completed a record keeping course in the last 6 months.
Mr. Greer, wondering if you would entertain a friendly amendment. She indicated this was not her population of comfort. I know she also indicated she wouldn't likely practice in this area, but I was wondering if you would entertain the amendment of an additional 6 hours of geriatric education.
The reason I didn't is because of that representation, but I'm fine to include it. So yes, I'll accept the friendly amendment.
We need a second.
This is Dr. Cornell. I'll second it.
Thank you. You're in discussion.
Mr. Greer, it's Dr. King. Can you help me understand how the documentation and the ethics course will help her understand the most appropriate and legal ways to supervise assistive personnel?
Well, maybe you can help me, because you know I wasn't exactly thinking about it that way. If that's a concern and you have an alternative, I'm happy to consider it.
The only thing I could think of potentially would be for practice in our state is to retake the jurisprudence.
But that would be disciplinary.
Correct. So in order to order jurisprudence, it would have to be a disciplinary order.
Karen, are you aware of any resources on the APTA website that are classes with regard to supervision and delegation? I know they have an abundance of information.
I do know that the course that she took had 2 hours of supervision in it. I am unaware of any specific class or course from the APTA or any other entity. They are very difficult to find. However, we've always limited it to online courses. So that's what to non-online courses. So that's what I'm familiar with. I am not familiar with what's available online.
I can't say with absolute certainty. I have a feeling that there is an online supervision course available through the APTA. Is there anyone that can verify that for me?
I can't. But if she can find one and bring it back to staff and have it approved, we're good. If she comes back and she says, you know, I've looked everywhere, I can't find anything, then I would recommend her bringing it back to the board for our modification.
And I appreciate you entertaining it, that thought, because as I'm looking at things, yes, there are some documentation pieces and some ethical things, but it seems like the things that really impacted her, the challenges here were not understanding delegation and supervision of assistive personnel.
This is Peggy. The problem I have with this, I mean, I'm sure Ms. Hall is an excellent PT, but when you're embarking on something that you're not have a lot of experience in, like contract work and supervising, et cetera, it's your responsibility to find out those things. It's your responsibility to do some research. How do I do this? What should I do by the law? And there are resources out there, which obviously she did none. So I find that a little bit disturbing.
I understand that, Peggy. I think that if... I had a thought and then it didn't make any sense, so I'm going to be quiet. So
I'll remind the board that the motion before you is a non-disciplinary order for 6 hours of record keeping. But I'm Mr. Greer, can we call that documentation or actual physical record keeping?
Documentation is fine.
Thank you. Of which, if she proves has proof of certificate within 6 months, then she will. That will satisfy that requirement. 6 hours of ethics and 6 hours of geriatric treatment. There is no current requirement for supervision.
Well, we know that the supervision was covered somewhat in the current class that she took. I think an ethics course probably would touch on document non-supervision as well. It won't be focused on that, but it'll touch on it. So, and I'm good with that. Does everybody else have enough information to know what they're voting on?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
So the motion before you for complaint 1929 is a non-disciplinary order. 6 hours of documentation. If proof of certificate is provided, that requirement will be satisfied. 6 hours of ethics, 6 hours of geriatric treatment. Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Do we need to put in there that it can be online?
I'm sorry, we have a couple of housekeeping. How long to complete?
Oh, let's say a year.
Wait, Dr. Cornwell, it's Mr. Greer's motion. Oh. Mr. Greer, how long to complete?
6 months.
And is there an online provision?
Due to the public health crisis, I think we allowed to be completed online.
Okay, now we're ready. Are you ready for the vote?
Can I make an inquiry?
Yes, Mindy.
I just want to clarify, because I know in the past it's been an issue that the board has discussed. But given that this is a renewal year, will she be able to take those CEUs and use that toward her renewal?
The order specifically states that these CEUs are not available to be general CEU for renewal courses.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we're ready.
Wait a minute. What about the documentation course she's already taken? That could apply to her.
She's taken the documentation course, and we're going to make that certificate of completion part of a order. Then that would negate those hours from the general CEU total.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I just wanted to clarify.
Unless the board would decide otherwise.
I know this may sound a little odd, but, it just means that she's going to have to take a little bit more, and the current order is going to go into 6 months, so it's going to go into the next license year. So, and it never hurts to have more information than less. So I don't think we ought to change it.
So the motion, disciplinary order for 6 hours of documentation, proof of certificate within 6 months would satisfy that requirement. 6 hours of ethics, 6 hours of geriatric treatment, which could be completed within 6 months and can be completed with online coursework. Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Clinton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwell?
Yes.
Ms. Hunter?
Yes.
The motion passes. We need to stop the recording for a minute and restart it. So hang on 1 second, please.
Is every